Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, September 24th, 2021. President Joe Biden urging older Americans, frontline workers, and those with underlying health conditions who got a Pfizer coronavirus vaccine between January and March to get a booster shot, now that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has authorized third doses. President also condemning Border Patrol officers for using horses to keep Haitian immigrants from crossing the U.S.-Mexico border in Del Rio, Texas, but taking responsibility himself and saying an investigation is underway. U.S. House of Representatives passing a bill to guarantee the right to an abortion in response to the Supreme Court's letting stand a Texas law that bans abortions after 6 weeks, a challenge to the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision legalizing abortions before fetus viability. And the $1 trillion infrastructure spending bill and $3.5 trillion social spending and tax bill, both key parts of the president's agenda, both still facing challenges heading into a crucial week in Congress next week. We will get an update. And in Arizona, Republicans releasing their audit of the 2020 election in the state's most populous county. It confirms Joe Biden beat Donald Trump. Donald Trump continues to claim widespread voter fraud. And now to the coronavirus vaccine booster shots. This from U.S. News and World Report. President Joe Biden on Friday said that he would get his additional Pfizer vaccine dose as soon as possible, while holding out hope that his full booster shot plan for the general population will one day be implemented. His pledge comes after the Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have signed off on a plan to give additional Pfizer shots to people age 65 and older, among other groups. President speaking from the White House State Dining Room.
And this week, as planned, we took a key step in protecting the vaccinated with booster shots, which our top government doctors believe provides the highest level of protection available to date. The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, they've completed their independent scientific review. And based on that review, the majority of Americans who were fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine are now able to receive the booster shot 6 months after they've received their second shot. 6 months after you receive the second shot, you're eligible. Those eligible include, in addition to meeting the requirement of 6 months after the second shot, those people that are 65 years or older, adults 18 and over with certain underlying health conditions like diabetes and obesity, and those who are at increased risk of COVID-19 because of where they work or where they live, like healthcare workers, teachers, grocery store workers. That group makes up 60 million Americans who are now eligible for a booster with 6 months after their second shot. And up to 20 million who received their earlier Pfizer shot at least 6 months ago are eligible today. So those January, February, those folks are eligible now. And I've made clear all along, the decision of which booster shot to give, when to start the shot, and who will get them is left to the scientists and the doctors. That's what happened here. And while we waited and prepared, we bought enough booster shots, and states and pharmacies, doctors' offices, and community health centers have been preparing to get shots in arms, booster shots in arms, for a while. And like your first and second shot, the booster shot is free and easily accessible. Booster shots will be available in 80,000 locations, including over 40,000 pharmacies nationwide. So, my message today is this. If you've got the Pfizer vaccine, if you got the Pfizer vaccine in January, February, or March of this year, and you're over 65 years of age, go get the booster. Or if you have a medical condition like diabetes or you're a frontline worker like a healthcare worker or a teacher, you can get a free booster now. I'll be getting my booster shot. It's hard to acknowledge I'm over 65, but I'll be getting my booster shot. It's a bear, isn't it? I tell you, acknowledge. Anyway, but all kidding aside, I'll be getting my booster shot. I'm not sure exactly when I'm going to do it, as soon as I can get it done. Of course, millions of Americans got the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. My message for you is this. You still have a high degree of protection. Our doctors and scientists are working day and night to analyze the data from those two organizations on whether and when you need a booster shot. And we'll provide updates for you as the process moves ahead. Again, the bottom line is, if you're fully vaccinated, you're highly protected from severe illness, even if you get COVID-19. In fact, recent data indicates there's only one confirmed positive case per 5,000 fully vaccinated Americans per day. You're as safe as possible. You're in good shape. And we're doing everything we can to keep it that way, which is where the booster comes in. So let me be clear. Yes, we've made incredible progress in vaccinating Americans, with over 182 million people being fully vaccinated as of today. But this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. And it's caused by the fact that despite Americans having an unprecedented and successful vaccination program, despite the fact that for almost 5 months, free vaccines have been available in 80,000 locations, we still have over 70 million Americans who have failed to get a single shot. And to make matters worse, there are elected officials actively working to undermine with false information the fight against COVID-19. This is totally unacceptable.
President Joe Biden at the White House. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky late Thursday night approving the Pfizer third doses for those 65 and older, those with underlying conditions that make them susceptible to severe COVID, and also frontline workers like healthcare employees and teachers. That last category was not recommended by the CDC Advisory Committee. And today, Dr. Walensky explained why she did not follow the panel's advice.
As CDC director, it's my job to recognize where our actions can have the greatest impact. In a pandemic, we most often take steps with the intention to do the greatest good, even in an uncertain environment. And that is what I'm doing with these recommendations. Over the past 18 months, we have experienced a deadly pandemic that has had a disproportionate impact on parts of our country. Those on the front lines, in hospitals and classrooms, and those in crowded settings who have put themselves in harm's way on a daily basis. In an effort to protect those at greatest risk, our initial vaccine rollout prioritized these individuals, the everyday heroes of our society. Our healthcare systems are once again at maximum capacity in parts of the country. Our teachers are facing uncertainty as they walk into the classroom, and I must do what I can to preserve the health across our nation. I'm also aware of the disproportionate impact this pandemic has had on racial and ethnic minority communities. Many of our frontline workers, essential workers, and those in congregate settings come from communities that have already been hardest hit. Withholding access for boosters from these people and communities would only worsen the inequities that I have committed to fight against.
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky at today's virtual White House COVID-19 briefing. A reporter asked her about how this decision is being portrayed by some media. For instance, Fox News has the headline, CDC Director Recommends COVID-19 Booster for Young At-Risk Workers, Defying Advisory Panel.
Meg Tyrell at CNBC.
Well, thank you. Dr. Walensky, I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit more about your sort of deliberations over making this decision, which many of us in the media have portrayed as you overruling the advisory committee. And your press release came out after midnight last night, suggesting perhaps this really was a tough decision. And some have said this could undermine confidence in the process, where we saw the advisors go one way and you go another. I did just talk with one of the advisors who voted no, and she said she actually felt like you listened. And by putting the May language in there, that you really took what she was worried about, at least, into account. But are you worried about how this will appear and perhaps shape confidence in the process?
Thank you, Meg, for that question. I want to be very clear that I did not overrule an advisory committee. This was I listened to all of the proceedings of the FDA advisory committee and intently listened to this exceptional group of scientists that publicly and very transparently deliberated for hours over some of these very difficult questions and where the science was. After those deliberations, I listened to the votes, I listened to the comments on the votes, and this was a scientific close call. And I think you could tell by the duration of the meeting and the discussions that this was a scientific close call. In that situation, it was my call to make. If I had been in the room, I would have voted yes. And that was my recommendations came out after listening to all of their scientific deliberations. To the extent that people are concerned about confidence, I would say they should listen to the deliberations themselves. We did it publicly, we did it transparently, and we did it with some of the best scientists in the country.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky is CDC director at today's White House COVID-19 briefing. Also on COVID, the White House approving new guidance today that would require federal contractors and subcontractors to have their workforce fully vaccinated by December 8th. And two hosts of ABC's program The View left the show set today after testing positive for COVID-19 just before Vice President Kamala Harris was expected to appear in person on the program. Sonny Hostin and Anna Navarro were fully vaccinated and they got breakthrough cases, co-host Joe Behar said. Vice President Harris then did the interview remotely, White House saying Harris did not have any contact with Hostin or Navarro. This from WashingtonPost.com. The House on Friday passed legislation that would create a statutory right for healthcare professionals to provide abortions amid an intensifying legal battle over a Texas law that is the most restrictive in the nation. The measure would essentially codify Roe v. Wade, the 1973 Supreme Court decision guaranteeing the right to abortion before viability, usually around 22 to 24 weeks. The new Texas law, which took effect on September 1st after the Supreme Court refused to immediately block its enforcement, bans abortions as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy and makes no exceptions for rape, sexual abuse, or incest. On the House floor, Congresswoman Judy Chu, the bill sponsor.
I rise today in strong support of my bill, the Women's Health Protection Act. For decades, Roe v. Wade has guaranteed everyone the freedom to access safe abortion care regardless of background. And for decades, anti-abortion extremists have been devising new ways to put that right out of reach. That's left many, mainly low-income people of color, left to fear that every new anti-choice law could be the one that finally puts abortion access out of reach for them or their daughters. Well, it's time to put a stop to these attacks once and for all. With today's historic vote, we are ensuring that access to abortion care is a right from Texas to California. This bill respects our right and the freedom to make our own choices about our bodies, and it leaves those decisions up to us and our doctors. It's time to take control of our bodies out of the hands of extreme right-wing politicians. It's time to pass the Women's Health Protection Act.
Judy Chu, California Democrat on the House floor. Speaking in opposition, Congresswoman Virginia Fox, Republican from North Carolina.
I rise in strong opposition to H.R. 3755, the so-called Women's Health Protection Act. This should be called the Destruction of Unborn Babies at Any Stage of Development Act. The principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are America's foundation. Without question, life is the fundamental component to both liberty and the pursuit of happiness. The American people understand the importance of protecting life. An AP poll shows that 54% of Americans believe abortions should be illegal in the third trimester. Another 26% believe it should be illegal in most cases in the third trimester. What's more, 65% of Americans believe abortion without restrictions should be illegal during the second trimester as well. But this latest Democrat scheme would go against the wishes of the American people and make abortion on demand for any reason until the time of birth. It's clear to see that the so-called Women's Health Protection Act is not about protecting the lives of unborn female babies. It's about handing the anti unborn baby industry a victory it has sought for many years. I oppose H.R. 3755, and I urge my colleagues to do the same. We're a country that up until now has valued life, and the majority of Americans still value life, especially the lives of unborn children.
Virginia Fox during today's U.S. House debate. The bill passed the House. The vote was 218 to 211, almost all along party lines. One Democrat voted no, Henry Cuellar of Texas. And debate on this issue also spilling off the floor and outside the U.S. Capitol building. Democratic Representative Debbie Dingell of Michigan getting into an argument with Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia. This was on the Capitol steps.
Killing a baby up until birth is a lack of civility. It's called murder. Hey, how about the border down there? Lack of civility. How about lack of laws or protecting and upholding our constitution?
You should practice the basic thing you're taught in church. Respect your
neighbor. Taught in church? Are you kidding me? Try being a Christian and supporting
you
life.
Try being a Christian and try to
support life. Watch your step, lady. You're going to fall down. Control yourself.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene and Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on the steps of the U.S. Capitol. The bill that passed the House today on abortion policy now heads to the Senate. And the Supreme Court plans to hear a case involving an abortion restriction law out of Mississippi. Oral argument scheduled for December 1st. President Joe Biden today speaking about U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents on horseback in Del Rio, Texas, using long reins as they tried to keep Haitian migrants from illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Some observers saying it looked like whipping, although others say it was just twirling to steer the horses. Here's the question to President Biden.
ABC, Rachel Scott.
Thank you, Mr. President. You said on the campaign trail that you were going to restore the moral standing of the U.S., that you were going to immediately end Trump's assault on the dignity of immigrant communities. Given what we saw at the border this week, have you failed in that promise? And this is happening under your watch. Do you take responsibility for the chaos that's unfolding?
Of course I take responsibility. I'm president, but it was horrible what to see, as you saw. To see people treated like they did, horses barely running them over, people being strapped, it's outrageous. I promise you, those people will pay. They will be, an investigation underway now, and there will be consequences. There will be consequences. It's an embarrassment, but it's beyond an embarrassment. It's dangerous. It's wrong. It sends the wrong message around the world. It sends the wrong message at home. It's simply not who we are. Thank you.
President Biden at the White House. A week ago, there were about 14,000 Haitian migrants under the International Bridge in Del Rio, Texas. And Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas saying today, there are none. Over the past week, well over 1,000 have been flown back to Haiti, and thousands more are in removal proceedings, and thousands more went back across the border on their own. Of those in the U.S. removal proceedings, does it mean that they stay in custody, or as many news headlines say, they'll be released into the United States? Secretary Mayorkas took reporters' questions in the White House briefing room today.
The people who were under the bridge, you've talked about some of them have gone to Mexico, some of them have been flown to Haiti. The others, are they spread out at CPB holding facilities, or have some been released into the community or released to family members awaiting hearing?
So you ask
What's
a very
their status?
So let me be clear. So some have been returned to Haiti, indeed. Others have been moved to different processing facilities along the border in light of operational capacity. And then many of them will be returned to Haiti from there. And if any of the exceptions apply, they will not be returned to Haiti but placed in immigration enforcement proceedings. I should say released is a very general term, and I may need to drill down on that if I may. Individuals, some of them are detained. Some of them are placed on alternatives to detention. We remain in touch with them. We monitor them to ensure their appearance in court at the designated time of appearance.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, part of today's White House briefing. President Biden's handling of the immigration issue has led some U.S. House Republicans to introduce articles of impeachment. One is Randy Weber of Texas, who was interviewed on Fox News Channel.
President Biden is actually empowering illegal aliens to come into this country. I'm from Texas. I was on the border committee in Texas. Texans are getting hurt, robbed at gunpoint. Some of the women raped. Texans are being burglarized. By 5,000 Texans were hurt when I was in the Texas legislature back in 2009 because Obama wouldn't secure the border. Now it's even worse, Carly. And Congressman Biggs is exactly right. The president has violated his oath of office. He's going to allow Americans to pay a terrific price monetarily and some with their lives because he won't follow our own laws.
Congressman Randy Weber on Fox News. He and other House Republicans introducing the articles of impeachment against President Biden, citing not only immigration, but saying that the president failed during the withdrawal from Afghanistan, leaving thousands of Americans behind, and also accusing him of abusing power by extending a pandemic-related freeze on evictions in the United States. And by the way, this is the sixth resolution seeking President Biden's impeachment filed since he took office. Washington Today continues in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com. Code POD.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. Now to spending bills. CNN reports President Joe Biden on Friday said negotiations on Capitol Hill over his economic agenda had reached a stalemate as sharp disagreements between moderate and progressive members of his party threatened to derail his plans. President said at the White House he was confident Democrats would ultimately reach an agreement and that he would sign the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package as well as the $3.5 trillion package to expand the nation's social safety net into law.
This is going to end up, I believe, we're going to end up getting both the pieces of my economic legislation. The first piece, the 1.9, fundamentally changed the structure and the nature of the economy in this country. Even though, remember, it got clobbered. It was this all this terrible thing. No Republican voted for it. Well, we got real economic growth. Now we're at this stalemate at the moment, and we're going to have to get these two pieces of legislation passed. Both need to be passed.
President Biden met this week with various factions in the Democratic caucus in Congress to work through the differences on the larger bill, $3.5 trillion. He was asked today how those meetings went.
What I've been telling my colleagues, and it surprises them sometimes when we in those rooms, and I don't know whether you heard, but both meetings went very well. I mean, it was. They were collegial. There wasn't. No one's hollering. Everybody's, you know, and people were hanging out afterwards in the Oval. And anyway, both the progressives as well as the moderates. And one of the things that I think is important for, and I'm trying to get people to focus on, is what is it you like? What do you think we should, don't forget a number. What do you think we should be doing? Is it appropriate, in your view, to cut taxes for working class people by providing for daycare, providing for early education, 3 and 4 years old? Is it appropriate to do something about free community college, or do you want to means test it? I'm telling them, what are your priorities? And several of them, when they go through their priorities, it adds up to a number higher than they said they were for. Because I think this is, we're getting down to the, you know, the hard spot here. People are having now to go in and look in detail as to what it is specifically they're for.
President Biden at the White House. He also said today he supports an idea by a key Senate Democrat to tax billionaires' unrealized investment gains each year rather than when the investment is sold. He was asked specifically about that. He said it's among a number of options he supports to pay for this bill. Both the $1 trillion infrastructure bill and the $3.5 trillion social spending bill, still being finalized, that latter bill, expected to be voted on both of them in the House next week, but there's still disagreements over which bill should go first. Now, as of now, the smaller bill is scheduled for Monday. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking with reporters as she walked in the corridors of the U.S. Capitol.
We are on schedule, let's put it that way.
For the reconciliation bill to be voted on Monday as well?
I will not be talking about that right now. We are on schedule. That's all I will say.
Thank you, Mayor.
And we're calm, and everybody's good, and our work's almost done. So we're in good shape.
How was your meeting with the president?
Thank you, ma'am.
Speaker Pelosi with reporters as they walked along on Capitol Hill. At thehill.com, there's this. Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, Democrat from Washington, head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, saying, "It cannot pass. I don't bluff. I don't grandstand. We just don't have the votes for it," referring to that infrastructure spending bill, $1 trillion. The Hill goes on. Behind Jayapal, liberal lawmakers have been lining up by the dozen to oppose the infrastructure bill, not to protest the policy, but because they want to vote first on the larger $3.5 trillion social spending package that stands as the second piece of President Biden's two-part domestic agenda. C-SPAN spoke this morning with a Republican member of Congress on both the Budget Committee and the Appropriations Committee, Ben Klein of Virginia, about both of these bills.
The House is slated to vote Monday on the 1.2 infrastructure package that passed in the Senate, bipartisan bill. How do you plan to vote?
Well, I'm concerned at, once again, Nancy Pelosi playing politics with what should be a bipartisan agreement. You know, infrastructure, core infrastructure, is something that we all can agree on. Roads, bridges, airports, trains. But what has happened is the core infrastructure agreement that's happened between Republicans and Democrats has been hijacked, once again, by Speaker Pelosi, tying it to a $3.5 trillion boondoggle. She calls it human infrastructure, which is a term that until I arrived here and this bill started to be debated was never used. Human infrastructure is whatever you want it to be. So she has thrown in the kitchen sink into this bill, and now, you know.
How is it tied to that? Aren't they separate votes? And why not vote for the $1.2 trillion infrastructure?
The progressives in the House have said that they will not vote for the 1.2 unless it is preceded by the 3.5. So they want the human infrastructure bill first. They want it passed through the Senate and the House before they even vote on the $1.2 trillion core infrastructure bill. So what you have is a bait and switch, essentially. And when you're doing that with the American people don't like it.
It's still separate votes, though, right, Congressman?
Well, sure. And so what you're doing is linking the two. If you say we're not going to bring up a 1.2 until we pass the 3.5, or that they're going to be considered together, then you have dynamics within the Democratic caucus to ensure that both pass. I will not be a part of any kind of gamesmanship or head fake whereby a core infrastructure bill passes and is the key to unlocking $3.5 trillion in spending and additional debt on future generations and big, bloated, socialist-style government programs. This is Bernie Sanders' budget. Remember, he's the one who wrote the plan, and he's trying to get Joe Manchin to come along with it. Fortunately, Joe Manchin, coming from neighboring state of West Virginia, understands the impact that type of spending is going to have on our economy, and it would have such a negative impact on our debt. you see inflation going up already. The price of gas up 50%, the price of food up 15%. This type of spending cannot continue.
Congressman Ben Klein, Republican, on Friday morning's Washington Journal on C-SPAN. So as of now, the House scheduled to take up and vote on the smaller $1 trillion infrastructure spending bill on Monday and the larger $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation bill, social spending and taxes. The Budget Committee plans to finalize that bill in a markup session this Saturday, tomorrow, making it available for consideration on the floor next week. The House Democratic Women's Caucus members rallying today on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, advocating for parts of that larger budget reconciliation bill they say will help women. Brenda Lawrence of Michigan among them.
When we say build back better for women, we realize that in this country where we see poverty and we know the effects of it, 56% of those who are living in poverty are women. When we talk about our educational outcomes, we know the majority of those touching our children are women. When we talk about child care for our women and for our families, who are caring for our children? Women. When we talk about when our elders need that daily care, who's walking in the door? The majority are women. You know, I was a dear, dear friend of Aretha Franklin, and she said, "What you need, I got it." All I'm asking for is a little respect. And that respect comes in pay. That when we take those we care the most about, our children and our elders, and we say they're the most precious things in our life, but we disrespect those who come every day to care for them. The wages of those workers are extremely important. I want you to know that when we had the wisdom and the courage and the compassion to have child tax credits so that our families can use that money to put food on the table, to pay the bills. No one should have to choose between caring for their parent and their child and going to work. I want you to know that when we talk about caregiving, disproportionately Black, Latina, and Asian women are stepping up to the plate. These investments that they give us every day, you know, it was amazing to me during the pandemic where all of a sudden we were awakened. Oh, this is what a frontliner looks like. In the middle of a pandemic, they're showing up every day to take care of others. In the grocery stores, in the daycares, and in the elder care, in the hospitals. So we, again, I want to invoke the words of my sister. We need to make sure that when we build back better for women, we're building back better with some RSECTP, okay?
Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, Democrat, with other House Democrats, a rally on the Capitol steps today. The U.S. Senate is not in session today, which means next week senators will need to deal with a temporary federal government funding bill called a Continuing Resolution, or CR, to avoid a government shutdown October 1st. The House this week passed a CR, but combined it with an increase in the federal debt limit for about a year. Senate Republicans are vowing to block that, saying Democrats should pass a debt limit increase separately without any Republican help needed. Republican Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana asked what he thinks is going to happen.
I have a question about the looming government shutdown. Is there, predictions are always hard to make, but is there a prediction that you have for, is it going to happen and how long will it last?
Yeah, I've been a member of Congress for 5 years. I've seen some wild things, and I've gotten out of the business of making predictions. But if the House passed the continuing resolution earlier this week, it needs 60 votes in the Senate. And Mitch McConnell said we're not going to pass it. So the only way to raise to pass a continuing resolution to avoid a government shutdown, which is separate from the debt limit question, is for the Democrats to come back to the table and invite Republicans back to the table with them and say, how do we get this done? And so far they haven't done that. So far Democrats have not invited Republicans to the table to negotiate a bipartisan deal that can get 60 votes in the Senate and pass out of the House. Why haven't they done that? Because the AOC, Bernie Sanders, socialist wing of the Democrat Party won't allow them to do that. And they own the Democrat Party. So until Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi say, we're ready to ignore AOC and Bernie Sanders and bring Republicans to the table to negotiate what a bipartisan deal might look like, then we're staring at a government shutdown, which all of us want to avoid. But it takes Democrats who control the White House, the Senate, and the House to come to that reality that they have to negotiate with Republicans to get something like that done.
Congressman Jim Banks chairs the Republican Study Committee today at a program hosted by the Republican National Lawyers Association. Wall Street today, the Dow up 33, NASDAQ down 4, S&P up 6. Story at Business Insider. Former President Donald Trump backpedaled hard from praising a group of highly respected GOP auditors in Arizona after their audit of the state's election results confirmed that Joe Biden won in the general election. He also released a misleading statement Friday morning, falsely claiming the audit found significant and undeniable evidence of fraud. Statement was contradicted by a spokesman for the Cyber Ninjas, who earlier told an NPR affiliate in Arizona, was there massive fraud or anything? It doesn't look like it. Cyber Ninjas' partisan audit concluded that Biden won by a slightly higher margin than was previously known. That's how Business Insider put it. Arizona Senate President Karen Fan presented the report to the state Senate today in Phoenix.
I'm going to go back to what we have said from day one, from November. This has never been about overturning an election. This has never been about decertifying. This has never been about anything other than election integrity. Because that's what we do here in the Senate. We make policy, we write laws, and we fix those laws if they're not working. It is the Attorney General's office to enforce those laws. This is our undertaking. If there were any results that came out of this that would have done anything different than what the election returns have said, those are all going to be turned over to the Attorney General's office along with all of the backup information. Our number one goal is to make sure those laws have been followed. Our number one goal is to make sure that we have election integrity here, that when you go to the polls, you know that your ballot was counted. And it was counted fairly, and it was counted accurately, and other people that shouldn't be voting were not voting. That's what this is all about.
Arizona Senate President Karen Fan, a Republican in the state Capitol building in Phoenix. The audit was of Maricopa County voters. That's the largest county in Arizona. And Karen Fan also noting that a draft of this report was leaked to the media. And she said the media went to the top line conclusion that Joe Biden won the county, but they missed some of the underlying parts.
Now, I find it ironic that our Secretary of State and a few others have called this a sham audit, that you can't trust it, you can't believe it. Well, the interesting fact is truth is truth, numbers are numbers. And we've said that from day one. What you're going to see is exactly what it is, the truth. And those numbers were close, within a few hundred. But what you have not seen and not heard yet, which is what you are going to hear right now, what you have not seen and you have not heard is about the statutes that were broken, how chain of custody was not followed, how we had a number of issues, which is why people question the ballots and the elections. So I ask that you please keep an open mind. I please ask that you listen to this, because the reality of this is what this is all about, is making sure your vote counts.
Karen Fan is the Arizona Senate President, part of the official presentation of the audit report. Earlier in the day, in front of the Maricopa County Supervisor's Office in Phoenix, Arizona House Minority Leader Rebecca Rios, Democrat, made this statement.
Over the course of the past few months, what was once meant to be a two-month event has turned into a months-long spectacle where auditors engaged with conspiracy theories rather than dealing with facts. They've looked for bamboo
fibers and Cheeto dust in the ballots.
They've ignored the warnings and compromised Maricopa County's voting machines and are trying to put the tab on taxpayers. They've engaged with and used in their draft report conspiracies around a missing 74,000 votes, which displayed either a complete and total misunderstanding of election data or an intent on sowing outrage over nothing. Given that we've since learned this, quote, audit has largely been funded by right-wing conspiracy theorists, I wouldn't be surprised if it was the latter. They've completely cut us out of any involvement in the, quote, audit. And most recently, Republicans in the state Senate tried to get Maricopa County routers, costing Maricopa County nearly $700 million, which plays a critical role in the community's public safety. This fake audit has consistently displayed a combination of incompetence and a total disinterest in finding the truth. Because the truth is simple and clear. Arizona's elections are safe and secure. They are now and always have been, because our elections are run by Republicans and Democrats committed to ensuring a safe process. Even in their draft report, where they admit that Biden won the election, they still hold that they can't draw any conclusions around the validity of the election. They continue to float pronouncements of fraud that risk trust in our elections and lay new ground to justify further conspiracies about our elections. And yet, after 5 months and significant resources, they still can't point to any specific moments of fraud.
Arizona State Representative Rebecca Rios, the minority leader, today in Phoenix. The 2020 election audit in Arizona has been followed closely by Democrats here in Washington, D.C. as well. And this week, the chair of the U.S. House Oversight and Reform Committee asking the CEO of Cyber Ninjas, Doug Logan, to testify on the, quote, this according to the letter from the committee, questionable audit your company performed and to examine whether this audit is interfering with Americans' right to vote free from partisan interference. Of course, if that hearing takes place, we'll cover it on C-SPAN. Also, on the issue of elections, Senator Chuck Grassley, Iowa Republican, in office since 1981, saying he is running for re-election in 2022. He tweeted this morning at 5 a.m. that he has a lot more to do for Iowa. Grassley just turned 88 years old this month, and he would be 95 years old if he wins re-election and serves out his term. The oldest senator ever to serve, Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, who retired back in 2001 at age 100. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. And for more top Washington stories, subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word, at c-span.org/connect. Hope you have a good night and weekend.